Alrighty, the idea of bringing these two good-looking young gentlemen in yesterday was to give you some insight into their industries, the problems that, because every industry, you know, we've all got challenges. One of our challenges we just discussed was delivering emails in a personal way to a whole bunch of people that are all at different steps. So automation seems to be a solution. If we can make it personalised automation, that's just perfect. So we got some insight into mortgage broking and financial planning and how legislation and, you know, the government from the top down saying, oh, you know, we've got all these bad things have happened and we need to make changes so that they can't happen again. And it's really only the bad guys that are just now making it tough for all of the other people. But that's just what happens. And we are so fortunate that at this point in time, we're a brand new industry. Nobody is telling us what we can or can't do or how we can or can't do it, so long as we don't step across the line of giving advice. And provided nobody, and in this room I don't think I can see anybody that's going to go and be a pirate and stuff it up for us, we should have a nice clean run for a long time. And it will only be if somebody comes in and says, oh, I think I can, what was the word that was used yesterday?
Churn something
or whatever. You know, we all should have nice, easy businesses that we can run the way we want to run them without the hassles. But the reason I've got these guys here today is because I want to go one step further. Because you get a client, you take them through the process of setting up their spending plan, and the numbers that they put down beside their loans and their savings and insurance and all that sort of stuff is just what it currently is. And for some clients, you know, it's really, really hard to get the plan to work. You know, what do we have to sacrifice or go without so that we can have bread on the table almost? And for others, it can be so easy you sort of think, oh wow, that was almost money for nothing. They're few and far between, of course, and then there's still variations between really hard and really easy. But what you need to understand is that no matter how hard or how easy, it can be different and it can be better. So that if you've got a client who's come through and they've got, you know, a whole bunch of unsecured loans, car loans, credit card debts and whatever, and we had three people up here yesterday who talked about unsecured debt and the problem that it was causing them, it's possible that that could be rearranged, refinanced, changed, you know, stuff could be done to make it different and make it better. And what I wanted to do is get these guys to sort of give us some insight into, you know, the fact that every customer that you have, there are things that other people could do that's not in your expertise, i.e. mortgage brokers, financial planners and whoever else it might be, that could make it better and therefore mean that they can put other stuff in their plan that was missing that they would have liked to have put in there. Am I making sense? So I've got a whole bunch of questions here, but I'm probably going to ignore them because I know these guys have been up the back here comparing notes and chatting away, and I realise we could spend a whole day here talking about how, what changes have happened and how this bank doesn't do that, but this bank will allow you to do that, and all sorts of strategies and things. But I just want to get some of the basics, and I guess the best way to start is to look at someone who comes on board, and like the people we had here yesterday, they got a whole bunch of unsecured debt. So that's probably, you know, like, what do we do, guys? Someone's come in, they got five or six credit cards, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 worth of debt. What possibly could we do? Well, we're going to try and get as much money going off that debt as quickly as possible. That's kind of our job. But what questions would you be wanting to ask, and what strategies would you be thinking of potentially doing? Neither of them want to answer this one.
I think it's probably easier to give you an example of one that we're working on at the moment. This was that Spurs, the one that I was talking to you about yesterday, the Spurs debt. So basically, like, the bank goes through everything pretty thoroughly. We had four credit cards, two store cards and two car loans. Maybe a boat loan as well. Anyway, so what happened was, he was an owner builder, so we could only do 75% against the on completion value of the house that he was renovating. He got to the end of the build and we always knew that we were going to be tight because we budgeted on 80, and then obviously the bank came back and said they'll do 75. So we knew that we were going to have a bit of a shortfall at the back end. Now the strategy was, let's use a credit card, pay the credit card off at the back. In between then and when we did the application and when we had to try and refinance the credit card, they'd had a baby, and obviously the income had dropped from probably around 70,000 on her part to about 35,000. So all of a sudden we couldn't demonstrate serviceability. The credit card's obviously sitting around $40,000 a year. What a bank does is it assesses it at 3% a month. So they'll use that figure as a repayment, even if there's no outstanding balance on the credit card. So that represents a figure of around $1,200 a month as a figure that we've got to put into.
Do you mean of the limit that they've got on the card, they just calculate 3% of the top?
Right. So if you've got 40 grand's worth of cards, then they'll just put a figure of $1,200, even if you clear it religiously, monthly. So as a comparison, what
hang on, that's a big clue, isn't it? Like straight away, there's a, what's the question they should be asking? Have you got credit cards that you're not using? Because that's reducing your serviceability, your borrowability.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep. Okay. It used to be back in the day, if you could demonstrate that it was being paid off each month, and you could sort of not include it, but that's all been changed with in the last couple of months. So that $1,200 a month, if we refinance that over a 30-year term, that's $200 a month that we've got to allow as a servicing calculator. So you can see that the massive difference it makes to the overall. So what we were doing is we had a lower income coming through from the female applicant because she'd gone on maternity leave, she'd had half pay, she'd gone back to work, but she was increasing her hours up. So obviously it was increasing, but it wasn't up to where it was. If you refinance that debt over 5 years, it works out about $750 a month. So you're still $450 a month ahead on the basis of getting rid of the credit cards and refinancing it under the home loan. Now, they were fortunate they had equity in property. There was the ability to be able to do it. But, you know, we had six unsecured debts. We had the mortgage, and banks don't tend to like refinancing a lot of unsecured debt. You've got to be a little bit careful with how you do it. But overall, you know, we're putting the customer in a much better position because we've got, you know, debt repayment over a shorter term, we've got lower interest rates, we've got, you know, like a whole lot of other factors, increased borrowing capacity. So that's something I suppose that you guys can look into. If you see that there's a whole lot of different commitments on there, that's probably a bit of a trigger to sort of go, hey, how can we, or is there equity in the property, or at least ask the question, you know, like, what's your property worth? We know what your mortgage is, we know what you've got outstanding, and hopefully in that way you can sort of restructure some stuff.
So we just went to the second level because there we've assumed there is a property. And I know many of the people that you deal with don't have a property, so they're just, there's nothing to secure. So is there any easy, like, what do you do when someone walks in and says they've got all these credit cards?
Yeah, you can achieve the same thing, like obviously with a consolidation from credit cards onto a personal loan, just bundle it all up and then at least you've got one payment. I think that when people start to see so many different payments coming out at different times of the month, it's sort of like a bit of a like, how are we even going to get to where this is, you know, like, and with the credit cards, if you have a look at your minimum, you know, if you pay your minimum amount, you'll have it paid off in 35 years sort of style thing. It's to the point of ridiculous, but...
Carol?
So, Paul, just a question. So, with one of my clients, we had a massive amount of debt, and we tried debt consolidation, and they were told that we couldn't debt consolidate because they couldn't service the new loan, which was going to actually be less than what they were currently paying on the base. Yep. So what do you do in a case like we really got between a rock and a hard place?
Yeah, depending on the lender. Like, you could try some different lenders.
So does that affect, though, when... Once you've done that once, does it then affect their credit rating
or
if you're doing that over multiple lenders?
Yeah, if you go crazy on it, it is. And like you also see with people that recycle their credit card on interest-free periods, they do have a lot of credit inquiries. And if you do have too many credit inquiries, it will mean that the bank will... What the bank does is it's got a like behind-the-scenes computer system. So how we actually put an application together, the more info we've got in it and the better it looks. So even if we've got one applicant with 3 months employment, one with 5 years employment, we'll put that as applicant A, just so that then it's a positive, you know, like we've sort of got all as much info in there as possible. In that case, I actually submitted it to their original bank, which was St. George, and they came back and said we can't show serviceability based on the fact of how they calculated their income. And what we were saying was, well, that's in the past, this is what the current is. So we've had to tweak it, and I ended up going to CBA on that one to get an approval.
Okay, so there is possibilities, even for someone who doesn't have real estate or something to secure, that if they've got a bunch of credit cards, it's worth asking the question, Who would they go to?
Oh, you could still go to anyone, to, you know, like a broker or a bank. I think brokers are probably better in some regards these days, just because each individual bank is so, you know, like, it's just their policies are changing so quickly and so much that, you know, we don't tend to do personal loans because I can't justify paying, or, you know, getting someone to pay me $1,000 or whatever it is to work it all out. So normally what I'd do is I'd just recommend that they go to see someone, you know. I'd have a quick look at it and sort of say, listen, go back to NAB if you're with NAB and sort of just do it. They've got all your account history and that sort of stuff. But you can consolidate credit cards into a personal loan.
Are credit unions worthwhile? Like, are they?
Yeah, they can be. Their rates seem to be a bit cheaper too.
Right, and because they're supposed to be non-profit organisations that are there for their members' interests, are they likely to be more?
They can be, but they can also be more challenging because they do tend to ask a lot more questions,
right,
and they can be quite difficult to work with.
I've got to stay conscious on time, so if you want to write your questions down, unless they're really, really booming.
I also want to make a really quick comment to Carol, and if they go back to their bank that they're currently dealing with, they might get a no answer, but if you go to a really good broker, they should be able to do all the calculations before they get the credit check, so they'll do all the calculations and then only go to the bank that they know you can get it through.
Yeah.
They'll double the checks without giving you credit rating.
Okay. Yeah, you won't lodge anything unless you've pretty confident that you're going to have a good crack at it, because otherwise it just sets off triggers. But like, everyone's accountant, like I had an accountant the other day and he came in and he said, oh, this is awesome, I've got, you know, like, I've gone and got all of these credit cards, and he had over $100,000 worth of limits, and he applied for about 4 different credit cards just to get the frequent flyer points. And I sort of said, like, he's my accountant, and I said, you know that that's, you know, going to hit you on too many credit inquiries as well as your limits at 3%. So if you ever want to go and borrow some more money, then it's going to be close all of them down and start again, sort of a thing. So just things to be mindful of if
what
they
was
do.
His comment on that when you told him?
He wasn't as familiar with it, I suppose. You know, it's an education thing that I suppose even people in the finance sector, you know.
It's easy to assume that if someone's an accountant, they know all about money and or whatever. Kent, from what we've sort of discussed so far, what would you like to throw in there?
Broking side and the personal insurance side, that's all fine. I was just going to make a comment, isn't it? You see it on the TV, get your credit score. And that the number of times that they're constantly saying, oh, go online and
get your credit score.
It's,
okay, and is that a good or a bad thing?
It's blowing up your
it's another inquiry.
Well, sometimes
hang on, did you all get that?
Well, sometimes an application is different than an inquiry as well. So, like, if we do an inquiry on someone as a broker, it doesn't show up as an application. So if they come to us and they say, I think that there might be something on there from years ago, the other things to take into account is on your credit report, because it's negative reporting. If you've ever had an issue with Telstra, which so many people do, or an energy bill, what happens is they flag it really quick, and then as soon as that goes on your report, it just absolutely makes a nightmare for us as well.
Okay.
Did you say that even if you find out what your credit score is, that's a credit inquiry?
I'd have to check on that, but I don't think some of those ones would treat it as that. It's more the application that triggers it.
All right. This is such a, there's so much in this.
Yeah.
Just write the questions down.
It's not a question.
It's not a question?
No.
Far away.
Depends, like, if you use Credit Savvy, how they're going, I'll give you a free credit report. They're not even up to date, and they do actually mark it that you've used it.
Yeah, right.
But if you use like their Vita report or Equifax, they don't actually mark it.
So if you go to a broker, we'll do your Vita.
Yeah.
And that so way it just shows up as an inquiry for finance. It doesn't show up as an application.
Okay. So you've got all your people who have got no property at all, and they've got lots of debt. You're obviously going to go and send them off to a broker, get a favourite broker that you can work with and refer clients backwards and forwards to, and see what can be done about refinancing, and just hammer as much spare money as they can to knock that debt down. Then we go to someone who's got some property, and like, that was a unique situation where this, you know, the builder was building a house, and the problem there, that I'm not sure Paul really made clear, was until the house was finished, the bank would not go and say, okay, now the house is finished, we'll refinance the debt. Like, it's sort of between a rock and a hard place, weren't they?
Yeah, if you're stuck mid-construction, it makes it difficult to fund extra money on the basis of.
Yeah.
So you can't go back and get another mortgage on it, you've really got to go and unsecured or credit cards. Or
all right, so if you, so now we've got a client who's got a mortgage, hasn't got lots of bad debt, but they're just sort of struggling pay to pay week to week, and it's not your job to do this other than just to ask the question and say, okay, well, you know, we've put together a plan. I'd like to help you get it as good as possible. It's possible that we can actually do better. You need to go and talk to a financial planner. Now, Kent, can you give us some insight into just an average mum and dad paying their mortgage, maybe got a car loan or something like that, flogging away week to week, frustrated? What can they do? They're making the payments, but they're just totally, they've never been to see anybody to get advice, because that's just how life's happened. And we want to try and suggest, we can't advise.
Looking at ways of freeing up some money, I think is what you're saying. Okay, there's probably a couple of things that I noted down, just sitting back. Paul mentioned yesterday stepped level, true level premiums. You, as I said, you're not all getting younger, you're getting older each year, isn't it? So let me just explain that, if I may, and I'll use the whiteboard, if I may, just to give you the rundown of what we're looking at. This is now and out to, age, say, 65. I hope you can see that up the back. You don't need to know about it, because you, from AMP days, you'll remember all this. Most people, if you went and... we're looking at your insurance, it's your life, your TPD, your income protection, trauma cover, even child trauma. Now, with stepped premiums, you... they're fairly affordable, and then they get to a point where they go off the clock. Now, most claims will have occurred, or most people go into their insurance here, and they're out by about that age group. Why is that? Has it got something to do with the cost of the premium, or is it the affordability is now, oh, I can't do this anymore? But when are you making the claim? The claim is actually there. So when you look at this, there's a massive gap between here and here, which is where the insurers are making all of their money. Now, remember we talked about churning yesterday, and churning's about, well, I'll put you into this product this year, and then out of AMP and across to AIA, and then back to Zurich, and off to Aon. It gets to a crazy situation. But this is where we look at things a little bit differently from the point of view, and I'll try and put some colour in it so you can see. But what you're looking at, this is the stepped. This is a little bit more. So the example I always give, if we started a young lady, I think it was about $165 per month. If she paid $240 per month, the cost of that premium is there. And the saving over the cumulative time to age 65, this one at 165, I think, is about 190,000 that they've paid over the life of that policy. And this one on the level premium is about $100,000. You've just saved them 90K.
And not only that, they're likely to have insurance when they need it, as opposed to having dumped it.
Correct.
And then,
yeah. Now, this is what they call a level premium. Now, where we were talking yesterday was, where is the opportunity that I can approach a financial planner with some leads so that I can build that trust? Yeah. Of course, any relationship's about building trust, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if the person isn't giving you leads, well, hang on, what are you going to do for me? But you've got to initially take that step. Could you imagine walking into a financial planner's office and saying, listen, I've got all of these clients, they've got this level of insurance, but they haven't had it reviewed for 5 years. Now, anything after 3 years, you're going to make a saving, because the rates are constantly changing. Now, this is level premium. I'll show you another one, and this can be a little bit confusing, but we'll see how we go. This might be a person that's taken out $1 million. Say, call it life TPD, all right? We've taken $1 million, and the person's age 35. Board keeps moving, so I do apologise.
Hold it for you.
Right. Now, the issue that you've got here, and this is, remember how we said this is still going up slightly on the level premium? True level is doing this. So the $1 million is locked away at age 35. Right? That comes up At the end of that 12-month period, it will increase by 5%. But that 5% is locked away at age 36, and so on and so forth, right through to a point where, at the end of the day, now, that's this. That's that slight increase in your premium. What you're doing with a true level, right, true level, this 5% comes back to age 35. This 5% comes back to, again, a greater saving. So it's not compounding. Again, there's an ability there, and there's only three providers that do it. But the opportunity, again, exists for you going back to the, just saying, hey, when was the last time you had that review? Because if it's then done, and the person comes back, this saving can be even more considerable, right? Right? So that's just an opportunity that you can walk in the door and say, hey, when was the last time you had a review? Some might say, well, I haven't got any insurance, but I've got all this debt and I've got six kids or whatever. And you go, well, that's great. So if something happens to you, mum or dad, how are those children going to have an education or be cared for? And it's being able to leave that legacy, all right? Now, that legacy can go inside super or outside of super. Mindy, last night I was talking to a few people on the table and they said, well, how can it go inside super? I've got insurance, but it's inside super. Well, that's a policy that's a group policy. Yes, it's a little bit cheaper, but it doesn't have any bells and whistles, all right? If it's... Someone's coming. Okay. There you go. Got the next lecturer. All right. One of the ways that we try to free money up for clients is, I've got a client at the moment, he's earning about 300K. He's got debt of, I think it's about 1.4 mil. It's a couple of investment properties and his own principal place of residence. And on 300,000, you'd be thinking, he's
set for life.
He's in clover, isn't he? Well, after paying $100,000 in tax, after paying, well, he's behind 35,000 in tax, he's got to pay an interest bill because it's interest only, that he's effectively 100,000. He's only got less than 100K to live on. His wife's an artist. They've got two children that are about to go into private schools, so 15, 25,000 a year. So you look at it and you think, these people, it's not those that are on the breadline. These are people that are just haven't thought about how they've gone and got in. Now, I know for a fact that what we're doing with him will be, okay, it's what you guys do as well, is sit down with them and say, well, where's everything being paid from? And the previous planner that he spoke to, he had everything outside coming out of the housekeeping. Now, that's about $18,000 to $20,000 that he's got in insurances that's coming straight out of the housekeeping.
Out of after-tax income.
After-tax income. Now, what we've been able to do is make those premiums deductible by putting it inside out of his super. So it won't be the full $20,000, but it will be about $15,000, which will be from super, and five out of the, I'll call it the housekeeping, right? All of a sudden, we've freed up that money. He's still got good cover, so he's happy. And on that basis, there's no change. Well, all of a sudden, we're robbing Peter by the superannuation account, but it's an ability for you to be able to free up some money so that they can come back and go, oh, I can now pay for that. All right, now, I know, Brad, you were talking about it yesterday, but I've got income protection under my super, and it's with XYZ. That's a group policy, right?
Yeah, but can I just ask, you said, when they are under a super, then their super fund can claim the deduction.
That's right.
Not the individual.
Yeah. That's right. But see, we might look at, okay, so we'll do life, we'll do total and permanent disability and trauma
and then there's child trauma, and then there's income protection, right? So TIP, that can come out of super, both stepped and level premiums. Now, if you walk into it, as I say, put it down, because there's the opportunity. You've got a policy of life cover, ask your client, how do you pay for that? Is it out of the housekeeping, or is it coming out of your super? If it's out of the housekeeping, you can free up maybe $100 a month by saying, well, why don't we take that back to your financial planner and get him to put that inside super? Now, I'm not giving you advice. You need to talk to your advisor, right?
Is that come out of a self-managed fund? Or
can do.
Can it be?
Yes. Yes. All of the above. Right.
I think some of these are just, you're not going to know all the answers. It's just a case of how you're seeing
highlighting the opportunity.
Like, and we've looked at it before, like David and I have thrown this around so many times, as far as like it's almost like, you know, the hub of a wheel, because you guys are really seeing so much data come through that, you know, you're going, well, what's the mortgage look like, what's the life insurance look like, you know, like there's a whole lot of stuff that you'll find out, that you'll discover that most people in finance would be envious of, because obviously they're sort of just going, wow, that's like a fairly big lucrative database to sort of explore from.
Do you guys find that once you get into that trust zone, people tell you everything?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even more than you want to know sometimes?
Yes. People are paying insurances, and a lot of people don't even know what insurances they're paying. Sometimes it just comes out of their bank.
Yep.
And I think once you actually have some insurances in that category in the pie chart, that the insurance is like 20 grand, and all of a sudden they go, oh my God, why am I spending that much on insurance? And that's when they start asking these questions.
It's this one.
And that's when you say, oh, yeah, that is a big chunk. Do you think you should talk to someone who maybe can help you get that chunk?
Absolutely, that's why I'm raising the opportunity to say, hey guys, you're seeing all of this, you're exposed to it all. Put your hand up because, hey, Mr. Financial Planner, I want to refer some clients to you because you're going to be able to assist them with whatever. So hence why I'm just pointing these things out.
When you're talking to clients, do you draw these pictures and explain it to them this way?
I have a whole PowerPoint presentation which has been done for, which we've developed over 18 or so years. So yes, they're all done, and it's the same. If I have to front up to court and say, you never told me this, I go, well, these are my slides from slide 1 to slide 18. Your Honour, this is how I've done it. good luck. All our meetings are fully documented.
Yesterday you were saying that there's financial planners who specialise in different areas, like estate planning, blah, blah.
Yes.
What sort of questions should we be asking if we're approaching financial planners in terms of finding out
what they do?
Yes, specifically.
And whether they're someone you want to work with.
But more importantly, how good they are. Because you've just referred to financial planners that haven't been doing the right thing by their clients. So how do we suss out if we're going to do the referring?
A financial planner can explain the difference between this stepped and level payments and things like that to a point where you understand it. Then you know they're going to do that for your clients and explain that to your clients and know that they're looking up their best interests.
To a degree.
Most of the
but they may not do the follow-up. That's what I'm getting at.
They really go to look after the clients. They can still do
this and do the sale, and they're moving on next. How do we figure out who to work with in terms of looking after?
Again, get them go and sit with them and ask them to present to you.
Okay.
That's one way of looking at it, and just asking a couple of quick questions. What do you focus on? Are you a risk advisor? Do you risk them super? Do you just do investments? Because really, some will do risk and investments, some will do investment only, others will just do, there's a new one which is more goals-based advice. That's the new trendy thing. AMP have come up with a trendy thing of goals-based advice. Goals-based advice, it should be what it's about anyway. It's about, we have 5 boxes that we create, and I'm happy to show them to you if you like, because most people will focus on, let me do it, and then we'll have a bit of a chat. All right.
So this is the income. This is the tax. This is bad debt. This is the investment. And this is good debt. Okay. Most people, and I'm talking about where they're heading to, they'll do these three boxes. They'll earn the income, they'll pay their tax, and then they'll try and pay off the mortgage, and at the end of the day, they haven't got anything left over. Right? They're struggling. What we're trying to do and what we're doing is goals-based advice. We're doing a thing called debt recycling. Is a lot of you have heard of debt recycling? Yes? Yes? No? Maybe? Okay. What we're doing is we're taking, okay, the income that we generate here and putting it against the bad debt in an offset account. This is where we work with people like Paul.
Paul, Kent, why is a mortgage a bad debt? Most people would be thinking, hang on, I'm paying off my mortgage, that's good.
It is bad debt.
Yeah, but I'm. Why do you call it bad debt?
Well, it's not generating an income for you.
Okay, so I just wanted people.
This is the first portion. This is why I've drawn a line.
I just wanted people to be absolute.
This is where most people will be,
yep.
And they really haven't got anywhere. Now, what we're doing as part of our strategic advice and goals based advice is very much breaking this up into, I'll call it a personal line of credit, PLOC, and this one will be an ILOC. Alright? And this is what we were discussing before. What we're trying to do, you would all remember Storm, yes?
Yeah.
Wasn't that long ago, it was just before the GFC. There are probably still blokes in jail from it, but they deserve to be because they were gearing the older people up, retirees up to the age of 70 plus, and guys, you don't gear that high. So we have the security here is the house, and we look for an LVR, right? Again, looking at your planner.
A loan to value ratio.
Of around 66%. Yep. We have to be less than that in order to go forward and start making investments. But what we're doing here, we might start and say, well, we're going to borrow 50,000K. Could be 20, 25, doesn't matter. It's just getting a starting point. But what we're also looking at, it might be $2,000 or $500 a month, but it's a regular dollar cost average thing, right? Now that money, because it's now good debt, that money gets invested. Now that could be an investment property, because the property, it could be shares, it could be whatever, so long as it's income generating. What we're doing is we're bringing that dividend over and into our offset account. So all of your earnings are going against your bad debt. Remember, we've got good debt. Because we've got good debt, the government, at this point in time, don't get excited because we might have a change of government and Mr. Bowen might decide negative gearing is no longer a viable thing. And we all slit our wrists and go to New Zealand because they've got good rugby team. So now all of a sudden we've got good debt. Because we have good debt, we now have a tax deduction. That ability, that also falls back into here. What's happened? We've paid off some of this bad debt. That's gone down. That's allowed us to go and borrow more over here. Then all of a sudden, and this is the key where you guys come in, out of this, we have living expenses. So we might say, well, it's $1,000 per week that we're trying to generate, right? So from that, what we say to them is, well, we'll transfer $1,000 per week. That's all you're getting. Don't get any more. If you can't spend that, and that's where we send them off to people, the spending planners. They're to look after this. Because if you go over, I'm not giving you any more money. Because the money we've all tied up, as far as the money that we've found that you're trying to pay down this debt, we've now created this investment that's generating an income that's allowing you to pay the debt down faster. Now come back to what we were talking about before. But what about my goals? What are your goals? The goals could be travel, education,
home ownership,
all of these things that you go, well, instead of having to, I've got to save for that. Well, you do. But over here, you're paying a dollar down to earn a dollar. Over here on these three boxes, you've got to earn $1.57 to pay down $1 of debt. So which is the better way? Look first of all for your living expenses. Get that under control. Have savings which will then allow greater borrowing. See the mortgage broker. Get an LVR that's less than 66%. And create this wealth by either investing in another investment property, or shares, or SMEs, small managed accounts, etc., etc. spending plan, right?
But
So that's just to give you an idea of what we do and what we're looking at when we see a client, because again, we're looking at trying to free up as much as we can. Because at the end of the day here, not only are we doing the goals, but we're putting more into our super. We're paying off the PPR sooner, so that's down to zero. And at the end of the day, we have an investment which is going to get us to retirement. So what we're doing is looking at, for our perfect client is someone in their 40s to 50s that's earning good income. And they're the sort of people that you could go and work with, because all of a sudden they go, well, you know, I haven't got time. My guy who's got $300,000, who's earning $300,000, he hasn't got time to scratch himself. He's actually a petroleum economist. And I said, well, what's that? He said, oh, I set the price of fuel. I said, oh, listen, mate, if you don't straighten up, I don't like paying $1.50 per litre, I reckon we might get a few mates around your place. Anyway, I won't tell you. Anyway, it doesn't work for me. Yeah, it's all right. So, guys, you can, to answer your question, you're not going to see someone who just does risk and super doing this.
No.
You're not going to see someone who's just doing investments doing this. This is what we call strategic advice. Because not only are we, this is giving you the roadmap to take you from where you are today to get you to retirement, then you'll have more specialist retirement people who will go, oh, I've got $1 million in super, I need to take that out because I've got to clear that fund from tax and things like that. So it's okay, get accumulators, right? You're wanting accumulators, you don't. Well, you might want some retirees, but retirees won't want to pay you because they'll be pretty thrifty. If you have a look at it, you go and see some of the little old ladies that we, and they'll have their workbook, and they'll have every single cent, cup of tea, $4.50, muffin, $4.50, and they just go, wow, we're keeping the tap on the books, aren't we? But it's good. It's okay. We've got a lot of those clients as well.
So we're running out of time quickly, but you guys sort of tried to have morning tea in that short break, so we probably started late, so we'll probably steal some morning tea time. But can you see that, you know, like the thought of going and getting, I need to see a mortgage broker, as many mortgage brokers and financial planners as I can find in my community to see if they'll send me clients. Have you guys got a slightly different perspective on that now? Because first of all, you can see that what you've got to offer is an integral part of what these guys do. So you're part of a, and what you want to look at doing is putting together little clicky teams where you've got a mortgage broker and a financial planner like I've got, who I go, we can work together. But you've got to, and what Kent said, you know, if you want them to send someone to you, the smartest thing you can do is send someone to them. Now, if you've got no clients at all, send yourself there for starters. That's a great way to find out if they're any good. Ask lots of questions and propose how this could work for this, you know, for a team, so they can see that you actually got your head screwed on, and you know a bit of this stuff, and you're the experts now.
And then that team environment actually works out quite well, because you know, like you might have the accountant ring up and say, or like I'll ring a lot of my accountants and say, like I got one that signed one on the 24th of December, and then pissed off overseas, but it was, he signed a contract, and then I rang up the account and I went, here we go, what are we doing, you know, like how do you want me to structure, or just, you know, like just confirming structure and that sort of stuff. So, you know, like it ends up being that you almost take the client out of some conversations, and then you do a lot of the work between the account and financial planner.
You have to know what entity
they've gone, oh, we do that. No, is that what you see saying? They don't.
So they're telling you that they do budgeting, spending planning?
Not spending planning, but help people, achieve their money goals or say, oh, we did that, It was almost like, oh, you're stepping on my toes sort of thing. Like, it was you're coming in and being on my turf, and I was like, oh, okay, right.
They can take that approach. I would say they're not a mature business, right? They're looking for anybody who's got a pulse at this point in time. So they could be a young planner. If you go to a more, but then we had the conversation last night, but on someone who's got a more established business, they won't see the opportunity of what they're creating. They're an old advisor that used to get upfront commissions, and therefore they're not open to the idea of doing this, because we've done it this way for the last 30 years. They can't see the fact that it's changed. Remember what I said yesterday. The first of this year is a new age. Financial planners, unless they change with what they're doing and start to outsource, what's the point? I can't go and charge a client $250, $300 an hour to do their budget. But I can for this, because it's strategic advice. It's going to take them from where you are today for the next 60 years and get them through to retirement and then pass that wealth on to the next generation. What they've got to worry about is here. All right? And that's where you guys come in. There's a huge opportunity.
You can paint that picture to them, then there's a chance they'll buy into it.
You're not stepping on their toes. I'm actually here to help you. And this is the trust element that you need to get across to them. And as I say, don't waste your time. If they go, oh, we do it already, that's okay. I hope, good luck. I'll leave a card with you. If you need me, call me. Because eventually they'll get to a point where they should be so busy that they haven't got time. Like, we aim to see 5 new clients per week. That's on top of the 5 implementation meetings we do per week, and then the 5 renewals that we do. We're aiming for 15 appointments per week. So there's 15 potential, or 5 new potential clients each week. Have I got time to sit and look at someone's budget that they haven't sent to me because, oh, I forgot to do that?
I was going to ask, is there a certain level of income that, so obviously the goals-based advice, you're charging your retainer an upfront fee to give that advice.
Yep.
I'm just sort of like how to direct clients that we have in, if they're on a really low income, obviously they're going to be more interested in the risk kind of focus. Financial planner, if they've got a higher income, but I just
want to
know what the rough threshold.
We have 3 stages that we take people through, because we're K2 Wealth. We call it, it's a bit of a skit on words, but from the point of view, helping you reach your financial peak, right? K2's a mountain for all of you. Kay and Kent and Kylie, that's my wife, so that's how we got the K2, but we stole it off the mountain. We haven't got a patent on it yet, but it's okay. But helping you reach your financial peak. Now, not everyone is going to walk in the door and say, I've got $300,000 a year per annum, and I can't make ends meet. You're not going to see all those clients, right? They're going to, and we always say, right, we need to get you to base camp. What's the first thing that we need to do? Your most important asset's your income. Without your income, you've got no ability to pay your debt and have the lifestyle and blah, 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 blah. But we need to get you there. So how do we structure that? Do we structure it some inside super, some outside super? Okay. Then we're still off looking for savings. How are you going with the debt? Oh, I'm really wanting to save for a new home. And we've got one at the moment that I think he's in his early, mid-30s, wife, 2 young children. Oh, how do we get into our first home? Well, we could send them off to a spending planner, and we will. But first things first is we need to make sure that the income's covered. She doesn't work, she's a housewife. She's a mum, full time. That's a very timely thing. What happens if it happens to him? That's what I was saying about, okay, you've got a young family with 6 children, something happens to the major bread earner, boom, we've got a problem. We can't afford anything. So they still need to look at it, and this is where I'm saying, you can see, oh, they've got no income protection, they've got no life TPD or whatever they've got. So it's an affordability for each individual person that they come back to and say, oh, just get this level and we'll get started.
and then we'll move you to the next level, and then we get you fit to fly
climb the mountain.
Climb the mountain. That's what it is. It's now, not everyone's going to be perfect. Sorry.
We are into morning tea time, but I'm happy to keep going. No, I'm happy to keep going. So you guys just need to know right now, there's food outside. I know you all got the cup of tea or whatever before. So.
I've just got a comment. I've done a lot of networking presented yesterday. Anyway, and I've met a lot of mortgage brokers and financial advisors, and a lot of my referrals come from mortgage brokers and financial advisors. And I just, in my like basic world, I stick to what I'm good at, which is the day-to-day finances, and I let the financial advisors and the brokers, mortgage brokers, stick to what they're good at. One of my clients has got 5 mortgages. She's got 4 investment properties and her own mortgage. And when we were just chatting, one catch-up, she said, I said, oh, when was the last time you reviewed your mortgages? And she said, I never have. And she's had them quite a few years, and all my mortgage brokers were chomping at the bit, you know. And then I said, well, I haven't, and she hadn't seen a financial advisor either. She didn't think she had any savings, yet she had $50,000 in an offset account, yet she didn't think that was savings. And I said, you know, you might want to think about seeing a financial advisor, because, you know, and she said, but her husband thinks that everyone talks down to him, and right, is there a chance that he might not understand? Anyway, so I immediately, with all my networking, thought of the gentlest, nicest financial advisor and referred him to her. I think it's just about experience and relationships in getting to know. If you don't like them and you wouldn't trust them with your own finances, then stay away. Or if they're all, you know. But I think if you just get a good relationship, or mine, know that if I've got someone, I'll give it them, and if they've got someone, they trust me.
And personality comes into it a lot. Like even within our business, like there's certain people that I'll flick over to my business partner just because they need a lot more of the nurturing, motherly sort of style thing. whereas I'm sort of like, you know, how can we turn that upside down and sort of, you know, look at this sort of stuff and make it sexy and interesting.
And for some people, it just scares them.
Yeah, which she doesn't like dealing with high-end clients and that sort of stuff. So she flicks me her complex stuff over, and then. So it works, and it's the same thing with referral partners, you know, like you might have a finance or a financial planner who's that, you know, sort of protecting sort of style person, and you might have someone who's super savvy and set up investments.
I think they think that we're financial advisors sometimes. They go, oh, can I ask you this, and what would you do? Yeah. And I go, I have to be very careful because I'm not a financial advisor that can refer you, you know what I mean? So.
Know enough to be dangerous, but not enough to give advice.
That's it.
All right, we're going to go into morning tea break. You guys happy to hang around for a bit? And if you've got burning questions, who would like, I mean, I'm just wondering if you'd like contact details to talk to these guys sort of beyond this weekend, or is that okay?
Yeah, like, I'm happy to field anything. Like, you're probably in some ways better off establishing your own group, like your own referral network, but, you know, like, if you want to throw a scenario at me, then, you know, like just email it through and I can sort of have a look at it or something like that as well.
Or if there's something that we're not sure if that's dodgy, we can say to you.
Do you want to write your email address up on the board, or are you?
Unless you just want to turn them out to everyone.
Hey?
Unless you just want to email them out to everyone.
I could do, yeah. All right, well, I'll email Kent and Paul's email address to you, and as long as you don't all attack them all at once, but you do need to go and build your own relationship. Morning tea, we've got to be back. Need to be back here at 11:10, and I just want a round of applause for these guys.